You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
The following is a paid program. This program may contain adult themes and nudity, and you can never go wrong with that. Speaking of always being right, views expressed on this program are those of life-experienced mechanics. Continued listening may cause addiction and, in rare cases, a rash. Discretion is advised.
A mechanic tries to fix your car, no matter if you're near or far. He'll change your oil or fix your flat, and he'll do it just like that.
Buckle up, everyone. It's time to get this show on the road. Time for Dave's Corner Garage, your Saturday morning joyride on Zoomer Radio. Got a car question for Dave or Alan? Call now, 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Okay, Al, hit it.
Yeehaw!
Hey, it's nice to be back. I tried bringing back the warm weather, but customs wouldn't allow
you.
Nope.
They're lucky to let you back in the country to begin
with. I watched border security. I did all the rules right. And they said, forget about it. You leave that stuff on the plane. Anyways, it's nice to be here.
This is not really meat. Why you say meat? This is not meat. This is candy. Candy is okay.
It used to be sheep, but now it's candy.
It's dead. It's packed in vacuum, so they say.
You know, we were laughing before the show comes on about grandkids, right?
Yeah.
And the rule in my house is, when you come to my house, there's no bedtime. So I have no problem getting the grandkids to come over, and we're feeding them with sugar and everything else.
Absolutely. Every piece of garbage that God invented.
It's not my job. I just send them here for the rest, and then we go home.
And they love you.
Oh, it's a riot, our place. It really is unbelievable.
How many you got now?
Eight.
All right. Octo-dad.
Octo-granddad. Granddad. Octo-grandpa. I've been working on that for years.
Well, welcome home. I'm glad you had a good time in Florida.
Yeah, it was fun. I'll tell you the whole bunch of stories. It's just insane down there. Mm-hmm. Anyways, before we go say goodbye for a break, Terry O'Keefe's going to be joining us from Crown. He's going to talk about springtime being the best
time. No, you messed him up. Terry O'Keefe is from Omvik.
Yes, I thought that was true.
I thought you got him a new job. We run an employment agency here, too.
And Terry O'Keefe's going to be here from Omvik.
And Trevor,
yep.
The Crown Prince, will be here, too.
We're not supposed to call him the Crown Prince.
It sounds like we got three
other
guests.
People, other
we
royalty.
Got three guests or two guys, four jobs.
Other royalty at the Crown, we're complaining we shouldn't call him the Crown Prince.
Okay.
But we do anyways.
And, of course, we've got time to take your calls as well. So
yeah.
You'll hear the numbers. Give us a ring. And we'll get to your calls
as soon as
they finish talking.
If you see that somebody hangs up, make sure that you phone right away because there's only a limited number of lines. They're full right now. But remember, so if they hang up, you dial, we'll be here. We do not have any in-studio guests, so all our time is for you.
That's it. You ring, we bring.
You got it.
This is Dave's Corner Garage.
Alrighty, it's nice to be back. Alan is with me here on the board.
And I want to thank me for doing a great job while you were away.
I wanted to thank Alan for doing a great job. What are you, reading my notes? I want to thank Alan for doing a great job and our co-host, Christine Logowski, and...
And Brian Max. He was great, too. Yeah, it was super time.
We used to work with Brian at another station doing a sports show.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy. Knows his stuff. Let's talk to
Speaking
Suzanne.
Of ladies, we're going to talk to Susan first. She's on line one. She's got a Honda Accord. Those are usually pretty good cars. What's wrong with yours?
Oh, well, as I've been told, it's unusual. Mm-hmm. I was having, the best way I could describe it was someone kicked the car in the rear end when I was driving it on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And it would only happen very infrequently, and then it started to happen more often. So I took it into the shop where I usually take the car.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the right diagnostic equipment, so they sent me to a Mr. Transmission shop.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the people at Mr. Transmission said that I needed a new transmission, and in mid-December, they put in a rebuilt transmission.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks later, the car was doing the same thing again.
Now, how often was it happening before this, though? Was it daily or weekly that you would feel it?
Well, no, it wasn't. And I don't drive the car every day. And
okay.
It happens most often on the highway at highway speeds.
So here's the question. Did after the transmission was repaired initially, did you feel any difference or did it essentially feel the same?
No, it essentially felt the same.
Okay.
So, as I said, after 6 weeks, mm-hmm. it started happening again.
Right.
I took it in to the shop because they have a one-year guarantee on the mm-hmm. repair.
Uh-huh.
And they investigated, and they had it for 2 or 3 days. And they said something about the torque converter
mm-hmm.
and something about the solenoid.
Right.
So,
which would have probably been inspected or replaced when they did the training.
I would have thought.
Okay.
So I get the car back saying, yes, our mechanic experienced the problem, and now it's all gone,
mm-hmm.
and I get the car back. And this past Tuesday, I'm out on the highway, and between the Leslie Street entrance onto the 401 and Warden Avenue, it did its thing 5 times. And then I continued on to Pickering, and it did it periodically on the way there. And then from Pickering to Oshawa, it did it so many times, my friend and I couldn't count the
number
of times.
Sorry, we don't have a whole lot of time, Susan. Did you call a tranny shop back again?
I did.
And then what was their response?
Bring it in.
Uh-huh.
I took it in. They had it from Tuesday afternoon, and I'm going to pick it up today.
Mm-hmm.
They can't find anything wrong with it. And they're saying it isn't related to the transmission. And I've noticed that it happens most frequently when the weather is, when the roads are wet.
Mm. Well, I think at the end of the day, I mean, someone's going to have to come up with a conclusion or a repair.
Yeah.
Nobody knows at this point what's wrong with it. I agree that, you know, it would be sad to think that you bought a transmission for no money because I'm sure you just spent $3,000-$4,000.
Yep.
But again, we have to determine if the transmission is still the issue or not.
Mm. There is a service between the mechanics. It's called MechanicsNet. Some call it All Data. These services have these experiences from other mechanics, and they put them online.
Uh-huh.
It's only available to mechanics. So what I would suggest is phone up the guys at Mr. Transmission and ask them to run it as a TSB or as an inquiry.
All right? A TSD, Thomas, Susan, David?
Barbara. TSB, Technical Service Bulletin.
Okay, and right? run it as that?
You run it as that, all right, because there might have been another mechanic somewhere who put this online and there's an experience about it and there'll be a solution to it also.
Right.
And failing that, I would phone Honda and ask if they have any recalls or do they know anything about this.
Right.
All right? That would be the next logical move for my thing. You can explain the story of the transmission repair, but ask them if they've had any experience. Here, I'll give you a number, 905.
905.
896.
896.
3500.
3500.
And you ask for Alan.
Alan?
Yeah. It's not this Alan. It's another Alan.
Okay, great.
All right. It's actually my brother's dealership, and you can ask for Alan. He's the service manager.
Uh-huh.
And tell him you talk to me on air.
Okay.
And ask him to investigate it for you. And he'll run also a history of the vehicle for you, and he'll find out if there is an issue with that car.
Great.
It could be something as simple as if it is a torque converter or something, the tranny shop may just disconnect that system, let you drive it for a while, and see if you still have an issue.
Uh-huh. But generally speaking, you know, we've worked with Mr. Transmission
yeah.
through the years.
They're pretty good guys.
They're a pretty good reputable shop, and like I say, head office is really, they want to make you happy in the end.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it, and I'm not trying to point any fingers. It's just the car scares me to death to drive it.
Well, like I say, Susan, what we have to do right now, and this is what Dave's trying to help you with, is we got to get the car fixed or at least try to figure out what the problem is.
Yeah.
But then we can move forward
and
from
there.
And
then you have to also understand the car is 10 years old.
Oh, I know.
Right? So it's something it's with age and things.
All right,
like
Susan, please stay in touch. We'd like to know how it's working out for you, and that's it. Lots of luck with it.
Yeah, good luck, Susan. Great.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
We're going to take some more calls when we come back.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to talk to you quickly about Florida before we leave. Everybody there, the speed limit is 70 miles an hour.
Well, they abide by it, eh?
Yeah, of course. They're all doing 85.
Oh, no, but I thought their ticket prices were super high.
They do 85 miles an hour steady. If you're not doing 85, they're actually bumping you. It's like somebody bumping you in the back.
Oh, wow.
Right? So here's a guy, passes me, got to be doing well over 100.
Uh-huh.
Right? Next turn, the cops got him on the side of the road.
There you go.
Hands on the roof, the whole bit, just like on television.
well, he was running away. There you go.
Well, we never know, but they're just insane. They're on the phone. It's the whole way. We'll talk more.
All right, John, Derek, you hang on the line. We'll take your calls right
and
after
And we
this.
Have a free line, by the way.
A free line. There you go. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. I don't know where we were, but we're back.
Do you find that cars do last that much longer these days?
Yeah, they do last longer.
So why is that?
20 years. Motors are good. Trannies are good. Mm-hmm. Bodies are
well, the steel's better, but, you know, they still need protection.
And that's going to segue us in. Good morning, Trevor.
Trevor Hutchinson morning, from Crown. How are you?
Fantastic today.
So are you going to take credit for all those cars lasting that much longer?
We'll take some of the credit, sure.
Okay, but there still is problem areas, though. I mean, as you know, like, things have changed over the years. The steel is better, you know, that the...
There's galvanized parts in there now, plastic.
But as a matter of fact, but because there's different parts, they need even more protection, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're building, you know, they're using, aluminum now. They've used carbon fiber, but there's still metal backing. The chassis is still metal. You have electrical components that are all subject to the moisture and subsequently corrosion.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor, like the F-150 is supposed to have an aluminum body. So aluminum, right, when it rusts, turns to powder, right?
That's right. It doesn't rust. You don't see the brown staining. What it does is it tends to be a very light gray color, and it does. It powders, and basically it's a reaction. It's a galvanic reaction where basically you'll be able to poke a hole through it. Like if you have aluminum and, say, carbon steel, or if you even have stainless steel and carbon steel, you'll have that kind of reaction.
Yeah, right. I mean, I know on my old motorcycles, when you just leave them out, come back in spring, and it'd be white powder on all the aluminum parts. And
now,
stuff.
Trevor, these Ford trucks, I mean, they are built on a steel chassis, correct?
That's correct.
So how do they fix that? Or how do they, you know, you have electrolysis that would normally happen, right?
Right. Yeah, so what they try to do to protect against it is they'll put some sort of a sacrificial material. It can be something in the form of a gasketing that'll go between the chassis and the actual body of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that over time, that material will break down, and then when you add in moisture and salt, at some point it's accelerated. And when I say at some point, I'm not talking that it... you know, maybe in the first year or so, but certainly you get a couple years into it, you're going to have issues. The other thing is that aluminum corrodes differently, mm-hmm. and it's still subject to corrosion. It's just a different type of corrosion.
So it doesn't look nasty, but in fact, at the end of the day, it's the same thing.
Right. And the repairs on aluminum are significantly more expensive than on body panels that are made out of steel. Like if you have to go into a body shop and get work done in aluminum, like you take one of those new Ford F-150s, mm-hmm. if you're doing work on one side of the vehicle, you could be $6,000 to $8,000 per side because of the way you have to weld aluminum, and not every body shop is qualified to do
That's
it or
correct.
Has the materials.
Mm-hmm. I have actually friends that are specialists for Audi, and he had to buy like $150,000 worth of equipment to fix Audis. Because they're mostly aluminum, and they get this car straight and to tack it together, it became really involved. So that was the other question I had. I came home just now from 3 weeks away. All my cars are gray. I mean, I got three black cars and two white ones, and they're all gray. But, you know, the reality is nothing really happens until the springtime comes when everything thaws out.
That's right. Like when we were as cold as we were last weekend in the GTA, you know, corrosion is just not active, right? But as soon as it starts to warm up, then all of that material that's not just what you see on the, you know, on the paint of the vehicle, but imagine significantly more on the chassis of your vehicle. And what happens is it warms up and the moisture's there. Now it starts to corrode it. And you'll see, like on your, even on your braking components, you can see it on the brakes. You'll see it start to rust. And the reason that happens is because very quickly that material that's on the road, when moisture hits it, there's no protection that's on the brake pad. Right,
so if people haven't had their car sprayed, you know, or maybe they just bought the car recently, what you're saying is now would be a good time to get it done.
Absolutely. You'll see in the next month, like very traditionally in our business, is that we go through February and the beginning of March, which is a little bit slower, and it's generally due because the weather's too cold. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it starts to warm up, people realize, you know, we want to get it clean. We need to wash the vehicle to desalt it and then to get it protected. And if you do that before you get too warm into the late spring, early summer, you'll be able to look after your vehicle.
Got it. Crown.com. Sorry, yeah.
Crown.com.
With a K. I wore the Crown hat in Florida. They all go, can you smell?
You know, that is an age-old question. The advantage is once people get it, they don't tend to forget it. So that's helped us in a marketing end.
Thank you very much.
Trevor, have yourself a great weekend.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, you know your hat's wrong. Anyways, it's Dave's Corner Garage. The garage door's wide open. We come back. We'll be answering your questions. I got all kinds of energy because I slept.
Excellent. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back. Dave's Corner Garage. The garage door is wide open. We're going to go to the phones in just a second. I did want to tell Alan about some changes in his business, which
in
is repairing
business?
Cars. Yeah.
What's that? What's
now
new?
They're doing is they're trying this in the U.S. at Ford dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
You will get a kiosk in the morning to come in and drop your car off. You mm-hmm. never actually talk to the service advisor.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in and you select what you want to have done in your car. You put in your name, address, Visa number, and then you drop your keys into the hole.
Right.
Bingo. When it's time to pick it up, the process reverses. You never actually talk to a person. The thing looks like the size of an ATM machine,
mm-hmm.
and there's even an extra key there for a loaner, and it tells you where it's parked.
Well, I guess in certain circumstances, that's going to be good, you know, for people who have funny hours where they work and pick up. But you know what? Ultimately, what we like to do, and this is the difference between a big shop and a
yes.
small shop, is we like to give people that personal service. I mean, when somebody's complaining about a noise or something they feel.
Yeah, like the lady with
like
the
Honda.
Like that
lady Sarah
right?
with the banging in the back. You want to go for a ride with the person to we can feel what's going on. I mean, I we joke about it, but we spent more time and money fixing the wrong noise.
Yeah.
Oh, that one. Oh, I've had that for months. I wasn't worried about that noise. Well, so that's why we go for a ride and say, which sound is it you're concerned about?
So in reality, that's where it's going. The reality is that it's everything becomes electronic, and if the power ever went off, I'll be in trouble.
There
okay, let's go to
All
the
right,
phone.
Speaking of power, we've got Art in North York. Scott's come on an electrical issue with his Nissan pickup. What can we do for you, Art?
Problem with batteries. I've had three new batteries put in this last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And went out to start the vehicle the other day, nothing. And apparently it's a battery again.
What kind of, are you buying it from the Motor League?
No, it was from a dealer.
From a dealer. And
they've done an AVR test?
They checked everything out and they couldn't understand. I was just wondering if they got a bad batch of batteries.
No.
Yeah, but you couldn't have 5 years in a row bad batteries.
No. Many times it's a problem with the alternator.
The alternator.
Yeah, many times what it is one of the diodes leaks inside the alternator and the alternator never shuts off and it's actually charged all night. The alternator's being run and maybe like a period of 2 or 3 days it'll actually kill the battery.
Well, they checked the alternator and it's okay.
Yeah, but
I was wondering if it would be the starter motor.
No, I wouldn't think so. That'd have nothing to do with your battery.
Wouldn't.
No.
Because
no.
when you go to turn the key, you just get a click
because it's low on charge. Here's what I want you to do.
Yep.
When you park your truck, disconnect the battery terminal.
Yep.
All right? And then come back and see if your problem disappears. If it does, then it is actually the alternator. I've had many cases where the alternator is firing, but the engine's not turning, so the armature is actually charged.
Disconnect the cables.
Yeah,
one of the battery posts. That's all you have to do. Take one side off.
You don't have to take the two off.
No,
just one.
And then then what do you do?
Then try the next morning and see if the car starts right up. And if it does, and the battery's
Well, you have to put the other one in, eh?
Yeah. You'd have to
put
it back on.
Well, you plug it back on, obviously, and then go fire up the car. So, or ask the dealer to check if there's a parasitic draw in the alternator. Okay? In other words, something is on, and the only thing that kills the battery faster than anything else is an alternator.
Yeah.
All right? And I've had many cases. A diode is actually like a valve that allows electricity only to go one way. So there's six diodes in an alternator, three for positive and three for negative, because it's alternating current. So the reality is if one of those is leaking, the thing never shuts off. It's always on. It's like the key is always on.
It's a standard that if I push start it, it would
exactly go. Yeah, that's correct.
It would.
Yeah, it would push start, yes.
Because I'm getting fed up paying $100 every time I get it towed.
No, I just bought a battery for my son's car. It was $173 my price.
Yeah, they've gone up a lot.
A lot.
All right, Art, get the thing checked out and give us a call back if you have any questions. But
pull the cable.
Parasitic draw is what Dave was talking about. And when you have the AVR test, that should decide or figure out what's going on. All right, we're going to go to Derek.
You call it
next.
AVR?
Yeah.
I call it VAR.
Oh, did you? Well, you've been out with you've been with the old people in Florida way too long. Derek in Waterloo's got an issue with his matrix. Derek.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good. So your car's burning oil.
No, it's not. I'm paranoid about this. Well, I just love, I always keep my car, you know, on the button, oil change, everything. And I use this car. I put about 30,000 clicks on it every year, and I love it. Never had an issue with it. But recently when I took it in to get the oil changed, the guy said to me, you know, are you overdue an oil change? Because it seems you've burnt a bit. And I said, no. In fact, I was ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently, I guess my question to you guys is, I read somewhere on Google that Toyota with a certain year of matrix had some issues.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been with the piston and the fact that they might burn oil. What can I do going forward to just, if there's anything at all that I can minimize so that I don't...
Well, what you can do, I mean, certainly changing your oil frequently is a good thing. That's to prevent the wear.
But every 8,000 clicks, I change it.
All right. Well, what you need to do is go see the Toyota dealer or call them anyways.
Yeah.
Find out if your vehicle is part of this recall.
Right.
And then if it is, what they're going to have you do is come in and do an oil consumption test, which is they're going to want to change the oil, record exactly that it's full and what the mileage is. You'll go back again in a couple of weeks, and they'll see how much you've consumed. And once they've determined that you have burned oil and you're part of the recall, they will fix that motor.
What year is this car?
2010.
The year is 2010.
2010, okay.
I've 160,000 clicks on it.
Well, that's fair. You know, like... When I was running the dealership for Honda, we were allowed to burn 1 liter of oil per 1,000 kilometers and still be within spec. So don't be surprised.
I've never seen the oil light in this car ever. Come on.
Well, yeah, but that only comes on, Derek. This is where you have to be careful. That only comes up when you've used all 4 liters, okay?
I get you.
You still want to check it regardless. All right, we got to run. I don't know if you can hear the music, but like I said, call a Toyota dealer. If your serial number and vehicle are part of the recall, they'll take care of it. There you go. This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be back with more calls. We got a couple lines free, so give us a shout right now.
Okay, it's Dave's Corner Garage, and it's time to get a little serious. I like that for the show.
Make sure it's just a little, eh?
Alrighty. You know what? Go back to the 2008 bubble for real estate.
Okay.
Where they were selling houses to people who were...
Who had no business getting loans because had no money, really.
So when they were not credit worthy, they called them subprime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the U.S., what's happening is they have this going on in the car business where they actually, you know, the way they could buy here, pay here, nobody's refused, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they don't really care about the price of the cars. What they're interested in is repossessing it. So they sell cars to people who have no business buying a car because they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And they repossess it, and they do the whole thing all over again. There's cases in the U.S. where the same car was sold 8 times
mm-hmm.
over a period of 3 years. It was sold, repossessed, sold, repossessed.
Well, so the number one thing is, first of all, if you can't afford a car, you shouldn't be buying a car.
Yes. And secondly, so they think there are so many of these vehicles out there now
mm-hmm.
that they're thinking this could cause another recession because of the amount of money involved in these cars. So it's not as much as a house, but it's so much activity going on in buy here, pay here, that they're actually frightened that the big recession might just start to be triggered by
cars. And the numbers were crazy on that story they were talking about. First of all, the interest rate people were paying was almost 20%.
19% is the average interest rate,
mm-hmm.
and the average default rate is 31.45%, 32%.
One in every three cars gets repossessed.
Gets repossessed before it's finished a contract.
So there you go. Make sure you read all the paperwork. You don't want to be signing one of these contracts where...
Well, it's not up here as much as it is down there.
Mm-hmm.
Because down there, they're a lot more liberal with their lending laws.
Right.
And up here, we're more stringent because of folks like Omvik. And when he comes on from Omvik, when Terry comes on, he's going to tell you a story about some of these guys which are curbsiders.
Uh-huh.
Where you're buying a car from a guy who doesn't actually exist.
Right.
Yeah, I'm selling the car for my brother. My brother needs a car. I'm selling it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Benjamin in Toronto who's got a problem with his Chevy truck. What's going on, Ben?
Well, the truck itself, it goes in drive okay. And then every other time when I put it in reverse, it just spins. And then if I really slow down, idle it, it will click back in. Mm. So I wondered if there was something wrong with the transmission or if it's a gear shift.
It sounds like the transmission. I mean, you first of all, check the fluid level, make sure it's full.
Yes.
And it is full, eh? Well, then, unfortunately...
Does it smell burned? When you check the fluid, if you give it a sniff, is the smell burnt or is it dark in color?
Oh, I couldn't know. No.
Okay.
I
don't know. Because reverse is the one that needs the highest pressure, right, Al?
Yep.
Right? So if there's a problem with a filter being plugged or something like that, reverse is usually the first one that acts up.
Okay. Now, you don't have a price for what that would cost to fix, do you?
Well, first I would suggest that we service the transmission, right?
Well, I would go and see a transmission specialist. I mean, you should go, you know, there's lots of people out there. Mr. Transmission was mentioned earlier. They're a good company. Have them look at the fluid. If they feel that the transmission is serviceable, they will service it to try to alleviate the problem.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if the fluid is too dark and they see that the pressures are really bad, you're going to need a new transmission, most likely.
Yeah.
You're probably looking somewhere between, about $2,000 or $3,000 in that vehicle.
Yeah, well, it's a 99 Chevy, so it's not a complicated tranny.
Yeah. But it's like I say,
four-speed.
Don't just spend money having someone change fluid for no reason. You want to get it diagnosed properly. And it's a free diagnostic. I mean, they don't charge for that, so you really can't go wrong. All righty, Ben?
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care. We've got Ann next in Everett. I'm not sure where Everett is, but she's got a Focus. Let's see what's going on there. Ann?
Hi.
Where's Everett?
It's just north of Alliston.
Okay, cool. What's up?
I have a Ford Focus, and the engine light came on about 4 weeks ago. And I went to see the mechanic, and he got that gadget, and he removed it.
Right.
And then it came on again 2 weeks later.
Question, when he said he removed the light, what did
he do? No, with the gadget that they use to see what it is.
Right, but he just shut it off, right?
Yeah, shut it off.
Okay, so what?
So he said if it comes on again, come back.
Right.
Because he thought it was just a glint with my gas thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But anyway, 2 weeks later, it came on again. I made an appointment for later on that week. By the time I got back to him, the engine light had gone off.
Okay.
And now, 2 weeks later, it's back on again.
Okay. That's called a soft code.
A stop what?
There's different types of codes. There's a soft codes and a hard code. A soft code is telling you there's an immediate issue, but obviously it's resolved itself because it went off. A hard code is a failure, and it stays in memory on the computer. So what you should be doing is actually getting in there and tell him to read the codes. He's going to read them, and he's going to tell you that it has a P something with four digits behind it code, and that'll lead him to the repair. So what's happening now is it's running on backup.
See, what could possibly be happening here is the computer tests the car, you know, depending on the driving conditions. So, for example, if the light was out and then all of a sudden you're doing a long highway run and it sees the EGR system not working properly, it may trigger the light to come on then. But if you don't do that kind of highway run, it may never see it. So, again, as Dave is saying, being a soft code where it doesn't stay on, there's no panic. You don't have to pull over to the side of the road. And but next time the light comes on, go see the dealer, and they should be able to diagnose it for you.
It should keep it in memory, and they have the ability to read it. And don't worry, the car will continue to run. It's like a computer running on backup. The computer actually puts a number in there. It continues to run the car, so you'll not break down.
All right, Ann. Thanks very much for calling in with that.
Great. Everett, that's where the Mount Everett
is. If you could read my mind, love.
Yeah, I know that.
All right. I think we should stick to fixing cars and not singing.
Suzanne Goes Down by the River was a better one.
No, I like my song better.
All right, we're coming back with Terry O'Keefe from Gombic.
Not Gord's Gold?
No.
Okay.
Who's that?
Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh, yeah.
If you could read my... Oh, my God. Come on. Okay. All right, this is Dave's Corner Garage and singing lessons, too. We got to run. This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back.
Speaking of potholes, there was one so big a guy was backing a boat up to it. Terry O'Keefe is on the phone from OMVIC, Ontario Motor Vehicle Industry Council. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great, guys.
7 days a week this guy works. Can you imagine?
Wow.
Actually, it's probably even more when you figure it out. Terry, we have a problem with still curbsiders. You just one guy, what, a $40,000 fine in Ottawa?
Yeah, that's a very recent conviction. He was selling cars from Saint-Laurent Repair and Collision Center.
Yeah.
Even after we had warned him that what he was doing was illegal, he continued to sell cars. So he was convicted on 19 counts.
Wow.
And as you said, a $40,000 fine. Another repeat curbsider from Mississauga, Andre Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
His fourth conviction last month, he got 50 days in jail.
I was going to ask you if they do jail time. I think that's the only way you can sort of keep them off the street, eh?
At a certain point in time, you know, when you see repeat offenders over and over, that type of recidivism, fines obviously aren't working, and it's going to take a jail sentence to try and address the issue.
But, Terry, I got to get rid of my stock. I got all these cars in stock, and you're not letting me get rid of them.
Do I have not access to my cell phone when I'm in jail?
You can get rid of your stock, Dave. You just have to become a registered dealer.
That's correct, yeah. And actually, it's not that simple either. You've got to be, first off, knowledgeable. Secondly, you have to be competent money-wise. You got to be. There's a lot of things to become a dealer.
You know, it's funny though. You kind of wonder why we need this service. But Sebastian, our operator, was just telling the story during the break about a friend of his. You know, bought a car, and it's like she had blinders on. Like she had no idea that there are bad people out there selling cars, right? And there are so many.
25%
of all
wow. classified ads in Ontario
are
placed by a curbsider.
It's
that prevalent. And you're right. Some of these are bad guys. They're, you know, the common source of inventory, salvage auctions. They're buying, and this was the MO for both the curbsiders we just talked about. They're buying salvage vehicles, fixing them up. Often the repairs are dubious, and then they're selling them to consumers without disclosing the true history of the car.
And you see, the answer to that is if a car is written off, the serial number disappears. But they don't do that.
That's not the current system.
That's right. So the reality is, I think that's the insurance lobby saying, yeah, our insurance rates are going to go up. So the reality is they cash out on these vehicles. But those cars should actually become auto wrecker problems.
Well, they should be scrapped altogether.
Yes,
they
exactly.
really shouldn't be fixed because, as we know, that most of the time they're not fixed properly. And they are dangerous.
They can't be because they're paying so much for the scrap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're even seeing cars that are going back on the road without airbags in them, and they've just removed the warning lights so the person buying the car doesn't know.
Doesn't even know.
Oh, which, you know, and that's funny because, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of it, but they've just changed or tightened up a lot of the regulations. And one of the things we as mechanics have to do on a road test now is look for visual inputs. In other words, is there a trouble light on the dash illuminated?
Oh.
And like Terry just said, well, they just take the bulb out, right? So how do I know that there's no airbag in the car?
Yeah, it's really important for anyone considering buying a car privately. Please go to our website. Learn the telltale signs of a curbsider and protect yourself. Because when you buy privately, even from a legitimate private seller, you're on your own if there's a problem. OMBIC only regulates registered dealers, and we can only help consumers that have done business with a registered dealer.
Right. So somebody who thinks they're going to be selling, saving some money by buying privately could be setting themselves up for a bad situation.
Terry, is that the only reason people will buy privately is because they think they're getting a better deal?
I think that's the most common reason. They think they're going to be able to buy, cheaper. And in some instances, you can. But if you're trading a car in, keep in mind that if you do trade a car in, you're probably going to pay less because you're not going to pay tax, HST, on the value of your trade-in.
And it's not easy selling a car. I mean, you're talking about Kijiji. There's something like 28,000 of these cars on the listing.
Oh, you're so right. And I can only speak personally. When I have placed anything online to sell, within 20 minutes, I'm getting text from scammers.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a piece of furniture or a car. So selling a car privately can be a daunting task.
Yeah, I mean, look what's happened. Somebody got killed by trying to sell a car.
Well,
straight up guy, you know.
That's right, the guy with the truck.
It
right?
happens. I had two big burly guys come in looking at a car that one of my customers was selling, and afterwards, my guy came in white and he was covered in sweat. He was shaking. He said, "These guys wanted to kill me. I was so scared." So it happens. You know what? Go to a dealer. That's your best choice.
And if you are going to insist on selling your car privately, if you're going to meet those customers, some police departments have centers right at a police station for these type of meet and greets.
That's great.
Or go and meet them, just park in front of the police station and meet them there. But take steps to protect yourself.
Good advice. Great
Super.
Advice.
Thanks, Terry. Have yourself a great weekend.
And you. Thank you.
OnVic.ca.
That's the one.
There you go. If you got any car questions about you buying new or used, that's where you got to go.
Yeah.
This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thanks, Terry. All righty, we're in the last segment, and we got a text from one of our listeners who's asking parking sensors. And it says, "Hi, Dave, can you talk about parking sensors on new vehicles? At times they go off even when you're not close to anything."
Exactly. I have that in my wife's car, as a matter of fact. She's got a newer Infiniti, and we're going down the highway, and all of a sudden, but you don't see anything in front of you. You don't see anything behind you. What it was the snow.
Snow or something.
Debris of some kind.
Yeah.
You know, fooling the sensors. The sensors being blocked. Its vision, its path of vision is blocked by something. And in this case, it was snow.
So how does a sensor work?
Not really well.
So is it sound that comes out?
No, it's like a radar or a LIDAR, they call it now. Yeah. And it's sending out a signal. And if it gets reflected back to it, it thinks there's something there. And these sensors are going to have to be improved because as we move towards autonomous vehicles, you know, don't forget, the manufacturers, just the other day, as a matter of fact, Ford and somebody else said by 2022, they expect a full level 5. That means a vehicle with no controls in it.
Okay.
We'll be on the road. So that's scary. They better make some inroads into making these sensors better. I know in my wife's car, the only repair is to disable it. But the problem there is...
Well, there's a button you can push. Yes.
You have to go... No, that would be easy.
We have that in our car.
You know, but you have to scroll on this car. You have to scroll through so many different menus. And when you're going up to 404 at 100Ks plus, you can't be doing that.
Besides, because you're on the phone having a coffee, and now you want me to scroll?
Exactly. You want me to scroll through menus to find out where the friggin' bumper is?
You know, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but they were talking about autonomous cars. How many people will lose their jobs when this really comes into effect? Because bus drivers will be losing their jobs. Taxi drivers will be losing their jobs.
But on the other side of the coin, and it depends, of course, if you work in a body shop or not, but because autonomous cars will be talking to each other, there's going to be way less collisions. So there's going to be body guys that'll be out of work.
So all those guys, they'll be zooting in and out of traffic. All these autonomous cars will have brakes on. Interesting stuff. A couple of things I did want to bring up. Let me go through my notes here. Mm-hmm. And I will talk about tire. Remember we used to pay $5 a tire?
Yes, they want to end the tire program.
Yeah. I wonder what Darren would have to say about that. So,
well, apparently there was a little bit of corruption going on at the top of the chain there.
Yeah, they were loaning each other money or something. But
at the end of the day, the idea was good. It's too bad it didn't work properly.
It's like most government ideas. The money never goes to where it's supposed to go.
Well, the only good part of that was the tires were being collected, so they weren't being left by the side of the road or adding up in tire dumps and then catch a fire.
Now, this was an article in the National Post.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes like this. A guy buys a Freestar in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
A decade later, he buys a Ford Focus in Alberta and keeps the Freestar. Both keys look the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the family keeps the keys at the door.
Right.
What happens is they go and they click the button, and the key will open either door mm-hmm. of either car. So in other words, it's the same code that's in the fob
right.
in the British Columbia car and in the Alberta car, but it won't start the vehicle.
All right, so that's a good part of it.
That's the good part, but the bad part is you have access to the car.
Mm-hmm.
He happens to own both of them. So he writes Ford and asks them, how many of these things work on other cars?
So in other words, how many different combinations are there?
Yeah, and I'm mm-hmm. wondering, how many are there?
Don't know.
So if you take your key fob and you walk through the parking lot, how many cars are you going to open with it, right?
Well, I guess the good part is at least you can help yourself to the stuff sitting on the seat, but at least you can't steal the car.
So he contacts his dealership, he contacts Ford, and he gets automatic emails. The truth is they didn't respond to him. But it's an interesting problem where your keys will fit other cars, and mm-hmm. maybe in some effect it might even start another car.
Well, exactly, and down the road. Well, but so many people don't even have keys anymore.
No, I don't.
It's strictly electronic.
Yeah. I have a thing in my pocket. right? And what you also though should realize that the battery in that key fob will only last about 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's time to change it. How do they know the battery is going to be bad?
Because on most new cars, they'll actually have this little thing on the dashboard. It looks like a fuel gauge, but it'll say battery.
Oh yeah,
and it'll warn you that that your battery is almost down. I know Toyota has done that, Lexus has done that, Honda's done that. And then if you ignore that, it will actually flash. And then if you continue to ignore it, well, then your car won't start.
Well, the wife comes to me on Thursday and uh-huh. says, your car does not start.
Now it's your car.
It's always my car when it doesn't work.
Of course.
So I said, well, let's try the other key. The other key being it starts.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, the thing is battery's dead in the thing. So it's a little cell, it's a 3-volt battery. It's 20, 25 usually is the code on the side of the 3-volt cell. You swap it out. And in some cars, you actually have to go into the car to recode it. You put it in the ignition and start the vehicle up, and it'll recode, and then everything works normally.
You know what? They actually have instructions in the owner's manual.
To reset
it? Yeah, well, to change the battery. And the other thing is to, if you go to YouTube, which is really amazing.
YouTube's the best.
You know, you literally type in, how to change key fob battery yep. on whatever you got.
That's what I did.
And sure enough, you're going to have a couple of different ones there. And you go, hey, that's mine. You click on it. Hey, my name's Rocco. I'm going to show you how to change the battery. And
what happens is there's a little button inside the cover. You got to click this little button and the thing just pops up.
But please, exactly, read the instructions or watch the video. Because if you think you can do it with a hammer and a screwdriver, you're liable to break it, and they're really expensive.
Oh, sometimes $700,
$800. Dave, we're at the end. We got to run.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Sebastian, thank you for whatever you do back there. I don't even watch.
He does a great job, though.
And thanks for calling in, and we're going to be back next week.
For another edition of
Dave's Corner Garage.
Bye, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
This has been an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.